Hi, this is Ken, and I've been trying to think of a way that I can finally motivate you that are taking your test now soon. I'm here at the office on February 22nd, Friday night, and thoughts abound. And I'd like to share some of these thoughts with you. It's going to be 36 years now, 36 years since I graduated from Duke. I have spent all of that time in either the business field or the field of education. And most of you don't know much about me, but I'm going to give you a glimpse of my life and some advice, if I may, some so-called life lessons. I don't know all the answers, but I do know a few of the questions and issues that you're going to have to answer and face in your life. Do your best. Nobody can ask any more of you than that. In whatever it is that you attempt, you're going to do better on this test than if you did no prepping at all. Believe that. Set goals. Well, I took the test the first time, or I'm going to take the test the first time, and I'm going to get X score, or I did get X score. I'm going to take it again, and I'm going to improve and do better on it. Improve the score by X number of points. Set a goal. My father was the one that instilled that in me when I was very young. Ken, set a goal. You'll come closer to that goal if you set one than if you don't. So when I was in high school, I had coaches that reinforced that. And it wasn't enough to just do okay. There was always the excellence that we were expected to do and show. One of my football coaches was also my track coach. And I threw the discus, as some of you know, in high school. And my father had said, set a goal. So I set a goal to throw the discus 190 feet. Well, with the help of Coach Rublin, I threw the discus 187 feet, 3 inches. Didn't reach the goal, but good enough to set a school record, which still stands today, 40 years later. Set a goal. Don't be a what-if-er. Take a risk. Take risks in life. Don't be one of those people that say, well, I wonder what would have happened if I had applied to Stanford or to Notre Dame. One year when I worked as a counselor at Brophy, we had 20 kids apply to Notre Dame. 10 were accepted, which was a lot out of 20. But one young man was not accepted that we all thought would be accepted. He had done just very well. AIA Student Athlete of the Year, Student Council President, NHS President, 4.0 GPA. He doesn't get in. Someone else gets in that we didn't think they would take. And so all of a sudden, other kids were wondering, well, if he got in, I wonder if I would have gotten in. Don't be a whatever. Take a risk. Don't compare yourself to other people. Because I can guarantee that if you do compare, you will be miserable your whole life. Even yourself. I had a parent tell me once, well, Ken, you tutored my older son, now you have my younger son. And he isn't anything like the older son. And I said to her, good, be glad that they're not the same. If everybody were the same, the world would be a dull place. Parents shouldn't compare siblings. Teachers shouldn't compare students. Peers shouldn't compare against other peers. So if somebody tells you, well, I got a 2,000 on my SAT, and you're saying, well, I only had a 1,700, so what? You are not your SAT score or your ACT score, good or bad. My dad always told me, Ken, there will always be those people in life who will do better than you, maybe, but not be better than you. I'm grateful for him for telling me that, because I believe that. An old lady has told me once, I am better than nobody, and nobody is better than I. I am better than nobody, and nobody is better than I. What wisdom. Yes, there will be those people that will do better than you on your SAT or ACT, or do better and live in a bigger house, or have more cars, or have more opportunities than you. But they are not better than you. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do something. And most importantly, don't tell yourself that you can't do something. So do your best. Set goals. Take risks. Don't be a whatever. And don't worry about what other people say or think or do. Most importantly, be yourself. Don't pretend to be somebody that you are not. Don't feign affection. Don't kiss up or down. Treat others in life the way you want to be treated. Be yourself. Years ago, I went to San Francisco, Fisherman's Wharf, and I saw in a wax museum a wax exhibit that I never forgot. And it was a scene that showed a very old, forlorn, sad-looking man lying on a psychiatrist's couch. Psychiatrist was nearby, and the caption on the back wall read, "But you need to get out more. You need to laugh more. Go see Grimaldi the Clown. He'll make you laugh." And the caption underneath said, "But doctor, I am Grimaldi the Clown." So here he was, laughing on the outside, crying on the inside, pretending to be somebody that he was not. There is a maxim that I learned during my graduate work in counseling psychology. It goes like this. The greater the persona, the greater the mask. That means the more people put up a front, the more they're hiding behind a mask. I've always enjoyed working with young people all these years, because although they may not know who they are yet, they're still learning, but they do know who they are not. While many adults that I've worked with through the years still don't know who they are, but act like they do by pretending to be somebody they are not. Persevere. Again, don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. I have worn hearing aids since I was 5 years old. Without them, I'm 90% deaf. I read lips. I've never made excuses for my difficulty. I've accepted my limitations. I've learned and seen many people in my life who have far greater limitations than I. and admire them. There's no self-pity here. If anything, my difficulty has motivated me to be determined to be treated like everybody else. So I've learned to adjust. When life hands you a lemon, make lemonade. Certainly, I'm thankful for the technology that has enabled me to hear and not be in a capacity of not being able to communicate, which would mean not being able to have learned all these years, but also to have not been able to teach. So when you're feeling sorry for yourself, and we all do, think about what it is that you do have and be thankful. Don't complain about what it is you don't have. Be thankful for your gifts, your talents. My father used to always say, we complain because we have no shoes until we meet the man who has no feet. Develop healthy outlets for your frustrations, your anger. Go run a couple miles, beat up on a tree, whatever it takes to get it out of you. For me, it was throwing the discus. I would go to the stadium near my house and throw and throw and throw, 7 days a week. My senior year in high school, I finished sixth in the nation in a national track meet. It was held in Sacramento, California. I lived in Ohio at the time. I was coached again by another very good coach, Gene Kidwell. Now, do you think that I was happy by finishing sixth? No. I felt like I let a lot of people down. I felt like I didn't measure up. It cost a lot of money to go from Ohio to California then, in 1968. My parents were poor. My dad made at most $10,000 a year as an accountant. Our family owned a small, hole-in-the-wall Italian restaurant, where we had weeks of $100 revenue. We were poor. It was tough. I would not have been able to go to Duke if it wasn't for a football scholarship. In any case, the guilt kicked in. I didn't do as well as I thought. I wasn't happy with my performance. The next day, after that track meet, my dad gave me a poem. He said, here, Ken, read this every day. And it was called The Man in the Glass. And it goes like this. When you get what you want, when you struggle for self, when the world crowns you king for a day, just go to the mirror and see for yourself what that man has to say. For it isn't your mother, brother, or wife upon whose judgment you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the one staring back from the glass. He had given me that in a 3x3 inch newspaper clipping. I taped it to my mirror that senior year summer. I had it with me all 4 years at Duke. I taped it to my mirror in my dorm room, and I read it every day. And finally, one day, I didn't have to read it anymore because I finally believed it. I was 23 years old. I was a personnel manager of a corporation in charge of hiring and firing 3,000 people. And there was a particular issue that I did not agree with the vice president about personnel policy. There was a particular employee who wanted to transfer from one department to another. And I felt that the policy in place was archaic. That person was in a position to not only be able to not do that, but also fear retaliation, including being fired. So I fired off a 4-page memo to my boss. I sat in it. You know, this is a violation of civil rights here, you know, Civil Rights Amendment, you know, Equal Opportunity Employment Act. It's an unfair labor practice. We need to change this. In any case, I waited for a response to that 4-page memo, and I didn't hear back from him. So I went down to his office one day, and I said, "Mr. Myers, have you had a chance to read my memo yet?" He said, "Yeah, I've read your memo, but you're not going to change anything around here." I said, "Mr. Myers, I quit." He couldn't believe it. He was totally up in arms. He said, "You can't quit now. We are in the middle of our busy season. You can't do this." I said, "Mr. Myers, I quit. I will train whoever you want me to train to be your next personnel manager, and then I'm out of here." And I did just that, trained the next personnel manager, and went on to grad school to work on my master's and spend the next 34 years in education. That day, I felt good. I stood up for what I believed, and I didn't have to read that poem anymore. That was July 1973. Be a friend. I believe that angels are here on earth to be our friends, in the form of friends, to help us and to make us laugh and be at our side in times of difficulty. Grant that I may not seek to be consoled as much as to console. That I may not seek to be understood as much as to understand. That I may not seek to be loved as much as to love. Be balanced. Don't overload yourself. Don't overstress or overstretch yourself. You know, I'm always amazed when I see the kids that come here to my office for the last 10 years now. I wonder how they do it, how they do all that they do. They make me tired just looking at them. And yes, they are tired. They're overtired and overstressed. Relax. Relax, kids. Take time for yourself. You deserve it. Being well-rounded doesn't mean being overwhelmed or overloaded or overstressed. Do what you can do. You can't do it all. You don't need to. Be balanced. You can please some of the people all the time. You can please all the people some of the time. But you can't please all the people all the time. I need to share with you something very important. It's about the dangers of comparing. I had in my math class several years ago at Brophy a young man named Eddie. He was a junior, and he was a popular kid. He was a basketball player. He was a good kid. And he had a younger brother named Robert. Robert, who was a freshman, whom I did not know. And Dad was a very hard man. And Dad used to compare Eddie and Marvin. And in Dad's eyes, Robert could never measure up to doing or being what Eddie was. And I think Robert started to believe that too. And so one day, Robert went outside of the house to a shed in the back house. And he opened the shed door, and then he closed it, and he wrote on the door, in blood, "Eddie, I love you." And then he hung himself. 14 years old. I remember at the funeral, Eddie hovering over the hearse, looking inside of it at his brother's casket with that numb look, with that blank stare, with that look of shock. And I went over to Eddie, and I put my arm around him, and I said, "Eddie, it's not your fault. It's not your fault." It was a sad day that I'll never forget. But I learned then about the dangers of comparing. I have a poem in my office that goes back to Duke days, entitled Desiderat. And there are a couple of verses in it that I really, really liked. "Be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. Strive to be happy." Years ago, during my graduate work, I heard some tapes by a Dr. Murray Banks, a psychologist. And he said, "Your happiness depends not so much on getting what you want, but in being happy with what you've got. Don't complain. Be grateful." Dr. Banks walked the wards of mental hospitals in New York City for 10 years. And he said, "One thing you will never hear in a mental hospital is laughter. Because if they could laugh, they wouldn't be there. Happiness can only be found in one place, inside yourself. Not in another person or another thing. Learn to be happy. No one is born happy or unhappy any more than they are born criminal, refined, polite, or educated. You learn to be happy. Keep things in perspective. Be balanced. Don't make mountains out of molehills. Don't sweat the small stuff. And it's all small stuff. Don't be afraid. Be thankful of your gifts and your talents, what you do have. And don't complain about what it is you don't have. Be happy. Don't worry. Persevere. Prove them wrong. Be a friend. And most of all, have love." A favorite author of mine, Leo Buscaglia, once said, "If you have love in your life, it can make up for many things that you lack. if you do not have love, then no matter what it is that you do have, it is not enough.